Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Blackhawks Live. Tonight on Blackhawks Live, a new season, different faces, and the drive to win.
Jones high slot, fires, pants it, rebound, score! Connor Bedard, Donato to Nazar over the blue line, down the slot, he shoots, he scores! Frank Nazar on a breakaway!
Join Charlie Remiliotis as he dives into what's next for the Hawks. Here's Charlie.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
Welcome in to Blackhawks Live. Charlie Remiliotis here in our downtown studio at WGN Radio. I'm with my guy, Jack Heinrich, who is always riding shotgun with me. Jack, what is going on today? It is bitterly cold outside.
Yeah, I'm just glad both our cars let us get here. They both started last night at the UC, and then we got here, so that's good.
Man, we started our cars at the UC in the parking lot yesterday, and my car was like, it took a while to really set up. I woke up this morning, I checked my phone, saw the weather, and it was like, feels like temperature minus 24. And I was like, it's going to be a great day. So, yeah, it's really cold outside. The Blackhawks kind of recap the last week in Chicagoland. They're 1-0-2 in their last three games. They've been on a three-game point streak. And it's funny because I feel like a lot of the conversations that we've been having behind the Blackhawks is a lot of the losses they've had this year have been in regulation. And you're like, man, there are some games this season for Chicago where it goes down to the final minute or two of the third period and they have found ways to lose the hockey game and can't find a way to push it to overtime or get an extra point. And now we're seeing lately in the two losses that they have had recently, they have found ways to at least pick up a loser point, which is in some ways is less demoralizing than if you just lose a game in regulation but feel like you deserve two or at least 1 point. And so from that perspective, it's been a positive. But I think the puzzling thing for me is Chicago continues to play well against some of the upper echelon teams in the NHL, picking up a 5-3 victory over Vegas on Saturday, and then yesterday leading the hockey game 2-0 against Carolina, who have been one of the best teams in the NHL over the last half decade. And unfortunately, the Blackhawks lose that hockey game 4-3 in overtime. They pick up a point, but it was like there was a point in the hockey game where it's like Hawks are up 2-0 and they're continuing to perform well against teams that are higher up in the standings than them.
Yeah, it's weird. I think we're talking about it. I was walking over with one of our sales guys after our remote at the barn, Joe Marino, and he was talking about betting or whatnot for like the game, and he was saying some things. I'm like, well, the Hawks have been very good against good teams, so maybe they can do it, or maybe there'll be a lot of goals or something. So I mean, it is strange. I think the Bulls are like that too. So both teams in the United Center, I think the Bulls are really bad. They just had a 5-game losing streak, and most of them are against the bottom teams in the NBA. So maybe it's something in the UC water that just they get up for the big games. I don't know. It's weird.
It's funny. I get that all the time from friends, too. Like, what do you think about the Hawks tonight against Nashville? And I'm like, oh, bottom feeder team? Yeah, stay away. Don't bet on this game. And I'm not even a betting man myself. Like, I totally stay away. But it is funny when, you know, Colorado comes to town or Vegas comes to town and, you know, your friends are like, this could go one of two ways. It's either going to be a win for the Blackhawks or it's going to be a 5-1 loss. And like, there's no in between. And so lately, the Hawks have found ways to really pick up some impressive victories, whether it was against Vegas or Colorado recently, Carolina yesterday. It feels like they should have had 2 points. But when you lead the hockey game 2-0, you feel like you're in the driver's seat of that game. Let's get to some of the storylines from over the last week or so. The last show that we did, we were talking about Seth Jones, and he was coming off that really tough game against Calgary where he was a -4. It was probably his worst game as a Blackhawk, and I think his ice time was 16-something, and it was the lowest he's ever had in a Chicago sweater, where he didn't leave the game with an injury. And so you knew the game after that, or the games plural after that, were going to be important for Seth Jones's confidence. And boy, he has really stepped up to the plate and bounced back in a big way. Had a really nice game in Nashville on Thursday against his former team, where he logged almost 26 minutes of ice time. He had an assist in the game. And then Vegas, most notably on Saturday, scores a goal, adds 2 assists for 3 points, and he was named the number one star of the game. After the game, I know you were in that media scrum, he got asked specifically about just personally, how good did that feel? And he downplayed it. Like he was like, it was a good team win, you know, almost feeling kind of, it felt like it came across as like he was a little bit embarrassed at how poorly he played against Calgary and where his game had been trending, and almost like he didn't want to give it any more attention. And so it was just nice to see him bounce back in the way that he did and not be so down on himself that it trickled into the coming games after the tough Calgary game.
Yeah, I mean, it was big for him to respond in that way. And yeah, it did just like looking at him, like in the locker room, it seemed like there was like a weight off his shoulders a little bit. Because, I mean, just the way it's gone, most of the time we've talked to him, it's been after a loss, and then yeah, he wasn't playing very well. So, I mean, for that to come after a win was good to see. And, I mean, like we said, we don't need to get into it, but he has the big contract, and he's going to be the point of a lot of, at the end of pointing of a lot of fingers. So it was good for him. I mean, the Hawks need him, and I think he's been playing with Alec Martinez, just to be solid veterans at the top while a lot of these young guys are figuring it out for the Blackhawks on defense. So it was good to see. He's under contract for a while, so hopefully it just keeps building. But yeah, they got a lot of young defensemen on the way and how that'll fit. But for now, I mean, he wears the A. He's a leader on this team. And he didn't meet the media after that game, but he met them the day after in the with practice. And that might even be like a longer form media scrum than after a game. So, and then he gets the good game. And I mean, I think he does what a leader does, is point it to the team. So, I mean, that's good to hear as well. So hopefully he can keep it going, because, I mean, when even though fans like to point the finger at him when things go wrong, their record's way worse when he's not out there. So he is a vital part of the team, being on the ice as much as he is.
Yeah, I've always said this about Seth, is you don't realize how valuable he is to the roster until he's not in the lineup, and you're like, oh boy, who is going to fill 26 minutes of ice time for the Blackhawks? And it's almost always going to be a committee type approach. The encouraging thing for me, he had 1 point in a 5-game stretch prior to the Calgary game, and since then he's on a 4-game point streak. He's got 5 points over those four. I'm sorry, 6 points over those 4 games, and he went through a stretch too where he went 3 straight without a single shot on goal. And now in the last 3 games, he's had 2 shots. 3 shots and 1 shot, and I think the shot attempts are up too. So that's encouraging to see that he's getting some of his offensive confidence back as well. Another guy that has really stood out to me over the last few games, has especially since he got put on a line with Connor Bedard, is Frank Nazar. I know the offensive production is not there for him yet, but ever since he got put on a line with Connor, the two of them, and you throw in Tyler Bertuzzi, so essentially the three of them, they have been generating chances after chances after chances in every single game. And Frank Nazar specifically, his speed has been so noticeable over the last few games, where I knew he was fast, and that was a big strength of his. It is a strength of his. I did not realize how fast he was. There was a play yesterday that I clipped and put on social media of him. There was a loose puck in the offensive zone, and Frank Nazar beelines towards the puck from his own end, and he straight line sprints to the puck, and he was blowing past everyone. And I thought, wow, he's got some blistering speed when he gets up there. And so I looked it up on NHLEdge.com, where they track some of these advanced metrics. And Frank Nazar's top speed on that play specifically was 20.37 miles per hour. Now, for context, Connor McDavid, who's the fastest player in the world, his top speed this year in a game is 30.9. So it's like Frank Nazar. Wow. Yeah. Frank Nazar was like, is like 0.6 away from reaching McDavid's top speed. And there are, I think Marty Natchez actually is in the 24s. He hit that top speed earlier in the year. But I was like, man, if Frank Nazar probably feels like he, that, and that was just a straight line. Like if he gets momentum where he's you know, some players take the puck from behind their own goal and they just dart. It's like, man, I feel like he could probably flirt with the 24 miles per hour. So his speed has been impressive. We threw out a poll question in our Hawks Click earlier today. Long term, do you prefer Frank Nazar playing center or wing? We have 33% said center, 67% said wing. And I lean towards the wing category as well. I think it's one of those situations where I just like where Frank can channel more of his offensive creativity on the wing versus at center. It's like you have Connor Bedard, first line center. If you have Frank Nazar, second line center, it's an undersized center group. And so I think once, you know, Sacha Boisvert or Ryan Green or even Oliver Moore, you can argue maybe he might be better suited on the wing, you know, if the Hawks are going to get another top draft pick this year, maybe draft a center.
Our guy Spellacy.
He could potentially be wing or center. Like he's a guy that plays both. A possible UFA signing or you trade for a center. So it's like if you push Frank Nazar to the wing, I do not think that's a terrible option because I think it unlocks more of his offensive creativity when he can create offense from the wing and not be so bogged down with the center type responsibilities of being more a little bit more defensive minded.
It seems like it plays to his strengths better. I mean, him and Bernard are going to connect on a goal at some point. They've been so close, and you can just tell that both those guys had really quick chemistry, which is good to see because I mean these are guys you want to build with. And then I mean Tyler Peduzzi is just perfect, just down and right in front of the crease, getting all these goals. He's just been on a heater with Anders Sorensen. He just sits there with his stick and he's just right there, and I mean, those two guys know how to get him the puck, so that helps. But I said wing. I mean, I like what these two have been doing, and I think they should ride it out the rest of the year. I mean, the Hawks, they fire Luke Richardson. They're probably not going to be as high as they thought they would. I think it's all about finding these combinations for the future, letting these young defensemen play, and then I think they should let Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar play as much as they can just to see, like, okay, these two guys understand each other. They know where they're going. And I mean, you can just tell by some of the passes Bedard's fed him. Nazar's just so close. He's hitting posts. He's hitting the crossbar.
Poor guy.
Big saves yesterday as well on him. So I think he's close. And I think those two could be a nice top duo. And like you said, they got a lot of guys they got to sort out. It's still early enough in the rebuild where you don't need to just put him in that one spot because you think he might be that second line center. They got a little bit of time to figure it out.
Yeah. And, God, you're so right. I feel like I'm. There's so many clips in some of these recent games where Frank Nazar has a chance, and it's like, oh, what a save by the goaltender! Like even the Nashville game, he finishes with a team high six shots on goal, and he had two grade A scoring opportunities in the first period, like right out of the gate. The first one where he pounces on a turnover. Or no, he got fed a pass and then ends up shooting it. UC Saros blocked it on his blocker saved it on his blocker. And then later on in the period, he gets a shorthanded chance and tries to go five hole, which is a similar type of goal that he scored in his first career AHL goal, which was a shorthanded one. Similar play that developed. And unfortunately, Saros stopped it. And so I left that game and I was like, oh man, he didn't even get on the score sheet, but I was like, he was the best player on the ice for the Blackhawks in this game. And the same felt where the Vegas game where he finishes with one assist, but I'm like, there was a play that Connor Bedard fed Frank later on in the, was it the second period, I think? I think it was the third period, and Nazar just got totally robbed by Ilya Samsonov. And I was like, oh man, like stared at the heavens. And so you look at some of the raw numbers, and it's like Frank has 4 points in 18 games. You're just like, oh, that's not great. But if you're watching like these last three games specifically, you're like, it's only a matter of time before the floodgates potentially open for this kid.
Yeah. And then, I mean, he got that one goal is just a wide open net. So like that's just his biggest luck is he needs like the wide open net. But I did like Troy saying he was on the penalty kill too, and he played that in Rockford. And I mean they had him and Mikheyev out there, and I think they had a few shorthanded chances. So
they did.
Using that speed and using him in all these situations, like I said, seeing what all these guys can do in the NHL and game action instead of practice can be valuable going forward the rest of the year. And I mean, those two created a few chances. I mean, I remember Nazar, I don't know if it was on the penalty kill, but there was that puck just floating into the Carolina zone. And then he came out of nowhere and dove and almost flipped it over to the other side. I forgot who was there, but
it was Bedard. That's actually the play that I was talking about where he beelined. I was like, holy cow.
He came out of nowhere.
It was so he blew past everyone. And I was like, wow, that is, he's got speed.
Yeah. So like, and, so it is exciting to see. So just keep trying to stack the positive and hopefully the scoring comes. But you can, especially if you're at the game, you can notice him so much more, just especially from our vantage point up top. You can just see how his speed impacts the game all around, even if it's not on the score sheet.
Yeah. His confidence is growing too. Like when he can make those plays and he's blowing by guys the way he skates, that confidence is going to trickle into the offensive production at some point, because sometimes you don't ever reach your top gear because you're a little timid, you're a young player just trying to finding your way, but he skates so hard that he skates with confidence. And I like what you said too about him on the penalty kill. That's an area that he was really good at in Rockford, and the Ice Hogs prior to him being called up, they were the top ranked penalty kill team in the entire AHL, and he was on the first penalty kill unit. Nazar was with Landon Slaggart, and the two of them would team up. I think Nazar had a couple of shorthanded goals. I think Slaggart had one as well. And so you talk about Nazar's speed, and it's like being on the penalty kill is a perfect situation for him, because if there's ever a situation where he can get, you know, he can jump on a loose puck, he will get a shorthanded opportunity because of the way he can pull away from some guys. And typically the defenseman on the power play isn't always the best defenseman, so it's like you can take advantage of that as well. So
and you throw Mikheyev with them, that's a little scary.
Mikheyev is fast. He's really fast. He hasn't been the same speed since the pre-ACL injury, but he's getting there. So, all right, we got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live. We're going to have a little bit of a trade deadline early discussion coming up next on 720 WGN. Welcome back to Blackhawks Live. Charlie Romeliotis here with Jack Heinrich. Here on this frigid, cold Tuesday night in Chicago. The trade deadline is on March 7th, but it's never too early to start looking ahead. It feels like January, mid-January to end of January is when the league chatter starts to pick up. Like, which guys could be on the market? Which teams might try to get ahead of the March 7th trade deadline? Because there is sort of that little runway that is hard for teams that are going to contenders to try to get back up to speed. So sometimes teams that are Stanley Cup contenders or playoff contenders try to get their business done earlier than normal. And it's just around the time when the players start to get asked about it. You know, you hear about some players that are pending UFAs, and it's like, are you open to signing? Are you going to, you know, will you be open to waiving your no move clause or whatever the case might be? And we started to hear a little bit of that last week when Taylor Hall, you know, got asked just about some of, like, his name had started to circulate in some of the trade speculation. And Taylor Hall obviously is a pending UFA for the Blackhawks. Has a $6 million cap hit the final year of his contract. And so, you know, I know at the beginning of the season, Taylor Hall, or actually I shouldn't even say beginning of the season. I think it was at the beginning of his Blackhawks tenure. He was hoping that he could find sort of a permanent home here in Chicago, and he can be here not just through the early stages of the rebuild, but through it. And we talked to him the other day just about his name circulating in some of these in some of the trade rumors or whatever. And we're going to play the whole, I think it's like 3-minute clip. And there are some questions there as well about whether you'd be open to signing an extension with the Blackhawks and whatnot. So we'll play this and then Jack and I will react on the other side.
Yeah, it is what it is. You know, it's a business and I guess we'll see what happens. You know, I don't have a ton of clarity on the situation at this point in time, and there's a lot of moving parts going on, I think, with our team and just our identity and what they're trying to do here. So I'm just trying to play as good a hockey as I can, and wherever they play me, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I came into this year wanting to, you know, continue being a Blackhawk for years to come. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore, but... You know, I'll leave that door open for sure, and understand that it's a business, and the team's going to do what's best for them. And I guess, yeah, we'll just see what happens.
Do you think it would be a different case if the team had gotten under a better start under Luke?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look back even to our exhibition games, we got thumped in a lot of games, and it just set our year off on a tough foot. You know, that's no one's fault in particular. It's just the way it happened, and I think that really put us behind the eight ball. And you know, for a veteran guy like myself, when that happens at the start of the year, you can kind of see that maybe things are going to shake out maybe a bit differently, or maybe just not how you want throughout the season. So trying to have the best attitude I can, and I'm always going to be a good pro, and I'm always going to play hard. So we'll I just keep saying it, but we'll see what happens. But I'm here, and you know, I love playing with these guys still.
It seems like you've had to deal with a lot emotionally this year. How do you stay positive and not, like, question, like, the direction of where your career's going or the direction of the team?
I just kind of tried to, like, make a pact almost with myself that I try and, you know, not project into the future, because I don't know what's going to happen, and neither does anyone, you know, really in this room. So I'm trying to just stay as positive and just take it a day at a time, because, you know, you never really know how the year's going to go. You come into it with a lot of optimism, just individually and as a team, and you got to be ready for anything, and that's just part of the business. It's part of being a professional hockey player, and that's, you know, part of when you're making as much money as we do, no one's going to feel sorry for you, and nor should they. So I came here today hoping to have the best practice I can and play the best game I can tomorrow, and just keep going from there, enjoy this trip with my dad. And, you know, I think being out last year gave me a lot of perspective on this kind of stuff, and I can still enjoy playing hockey today, so that's a good thing.
Would you want to sign an extension if that was available?
Yeah, I'd like to stay here, but I like the city and I like the group. I have a feeling that's not really in the cards, so yeah, we'll see.
So that was Blackhawks forward Taylor Hall just talking about the trade speculation, as his name is going to start to pop up in some trade big boards as the, you know, the insiders and the NHL start to put together some lists. And it was really insightful. One thing I really appreciate talking to Taylor Hall is he honestly wears his emotions on his sleeve when it comes to sharing what he's thinking. Even earlier in the year when he was a healthy scratch by Luke Richardson, just kind of sharing, like, you know, there wasn't really much communication, and just kind of disclosing his thought process. And so I appreciate how candid he is always with the media and insightful. And so for him, I think this season probably hasn't gone the way he was hoping as a team. Like, I think he was thinking the Hawks were going to take the next step, start to show some signs of improvement. He can be a potential piece over the next couple years for the Blackhawks as they kind of transition out of this rebuild. And so for the Blackhawks to be dead last in the standings, he was a healthy scratch earlier in the year. Obviously, that was under Luke Richardson, but even under Anders Sorensen right now, he's been playing on the fourth line. His minutes have gotten cut. He's not on the first power play. He's on the second power play. And so I think he probably is reading the tea leaves that the organization is probably going to go in a different direction at the end of the year, whether Hall is with the Blackhawks or not beyond the March 7 trade deadline. But I also, just listening to that interview, it sounded like he would be open to being moved at the deadline to play with a contender and play with a team that genuinely wants him and sees value in having him on the roster. Not that the Blackhawks don't right now, because they do. But I think Hall is probably looking at this like, okay, where is my future beyond this year? And maybe he can set up some groundwork with a new team if he gets traded at the deadline. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the deadline. But specifically Hall, that feels like the most likely candidate to be moved for Chicago.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I think the Athletic had that he's probably their most attractive piece, but who knows about Ryan Donato? I mean, he's been on fire. I think this is the last year of his deal, too, so it is something to look forward to. But, yeah, I mean, Taylor Hall has kind of just gone through it in his time in Chicago, missing most of last year and then just up and down the lineup, like you said. And now he's not playing as much, and it does seem like he really does like being here, because after the Winter Classic, like, he was probably one of the most disappointed in the locker room after the game. And he was just like, I love everybody in this locker room. And it's not like it's a dysfunctional locker room. It's just like they just haven't translated on the ice. And he really likes being here. And I think you're right, though. I think he kind of sees like, all right, I'm probably not going to stay here, even though he'd like to. So I think he's accepted that. And I thought what was interesting is him saying being out last year put a lot of things in perspective. So I think he just really likes being on the ice now, because last year that was taken away from him. And if that's with the contender, I mean, they'd be great for him personally, and maybe he can show what he's got at coming off that injury. I mean, he's had some really good moments this year as well. But in the elevated stage, if he performs well with a playoff team in the playoffs, that could help him going into free agency.
For sure. And the one challenging part about a potential Taylor Hall trade down the road is his salary. So obviously he's making, it's a $6 million cap hit. The Hawks would likely eat half of it, which is the most they can go to crunch that number down to $3 million. But with the salary cap so tight and a lot of teams wanting to make multiple moves and not just one, if you're a playoff contender, typically you like to add several different pieces to load up for the stretch run and the playoff for the spring. And so would you have to get a third party broker involved to crunch that number down even more, from like $3 million to $1.5 million. And so that is kind of adds another layer to the equation. Now, Taylor Hall does have a modified no trade clause as well. And it's a 10 team no trade list. So he basically can submit 10 teams that he would not want to be traded to. And so I don't think that would be, but I don't think that would hamper the Blackhawks in any way, because I think Taylor Hall would probably put a lot of contenders on his list.
Yeah.
And so I don't really see that being an issue. It'd be different if it was a 10 team trade list. Then it's like, okay, you only have those 10 teams to work with, and maybe half of them at least might not be interested. And so the Blackhawks will have their options. You mentioned Ryan Donato. So looking at his situation, he's had an awesome year for the Blackhawks, especially in the goal column, where he has 14 now. And so he's on pace to have probably 25-ish goals, which would be a career high. And so I look at his contract. He's $2 million cap hit. He's 28 years old, pending UFA. I mean, that's an appealing player. And he plays the kind of game, he's not the fastest player, but he plays the kind of game where he goes to the dirty areas. He can play in a middle six role if needed, likely better suited on a bottom six checking role, probably fourth line ideally on a playoff team. But I mean, for a guy that can score, that he's on pace for 25 goals, I mean, that's a pretty useful player for a contender. What I wrestle with is, if you're the Blackhawks, could there be an avenue where it's like, do you keep this guy through the trade deadline and potentially explore re-signing him to a couple-year deal, because you do still want to keep some useful players? Or if you're the Blackhawks, do you think, we have some young guys coming up, we want to play a speed-type game, and so Frank Nazar is here, you know, the hope would be that Oliver Moore and Ryan Green, these guys in college, turn pro, even though they're not going to be permanent NHL players next year.
Right.
You don't know if you sign something beyond 1 year, you know, then you're blocking some of these young guys from entering the roster. And so, I mean, Ryan Donato has been awesome, and I would not be surprised if he is one of those players that a lot of teams call up and ask about his availability. But and also, I think you want to be careful if you're Chicago not to subtract too many pieces from the roster at the deadline, and then it's just so thin for the last 6 weeks.
Got to balance it. Yeah.
Exactly. And then it's like, oh, man, this looks like last year's roster. This was tough. And so it definitely is trying to find that balance. But I agree with you that I think Ryan Donato's name could certainly garner interest. The question is, do the Blackhawks value getting whatever return you would get for him versus, like, let's just say you get a second round. It was probably at best, okay?
It's probably the high end. Yeah.
Probably. And so, like, what value would a late second round be versus, like, or even a third round pick or whatever, whatever that might be, versus just keeping him through the rest of the season and then potentially explore re-signing him? That's some conversations that the Blackhawks are going to have to wrestle with.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's really played well. I mean, he's probably been one of their more consistent players. I think he's played on every line. He's played center. He's played wing. And he's just been rock solid. So I think there is some value to keeping him, like they did with Jason Dickinson and Nick Foligno, and keeping Mrazek around. Just they're picking some guys they wanted to keep. He seems like a really good guy in the locker room too. So I could see them trying to keep him around just because, I mean, he's just so solid wherever you put him. So if they needed to put him on the fourth line with some of these young guys, they could. But yeah, it is interesting because he's having a career year, and when you have guys at their highest value, you like to sell, especially when the Hawks are in this situation. So it'll be interesting to see if maybe a team blows them away from what they thought they'd get, and then they end up trading them. But that, you're right, that is a conversation they have to have up top. More above our pay grades. But
yeah.
It is interesting to talk about, like, these two guys are probably more of their likely trade assets, especially because their contracts are up at the end of the year. So it makes sense to move on from them and get what you can in case you don't re-sign them. But yeah, a couple months away, the rumors are only going to intensify. So we'll see.
Yeah. The one other guy, it's going to be interesting to monitor this situation, is Lucas Reichel. His name has been out there as teams are checking on his availability. And it's a guy that, so Reichel was drafted by the old regime. So he was a Stan Bowman draft pick in the first round. And so he plays a really, he plays the kind of style that the Blackhawks are trying to mold their next great team, is fast, skilled, high hockey IQ, right? Character guy too. Reichel checks a lot of those boxes. The problem is he doesn't show it on a consistent enough basis for the Blackhawks to be completely sold that he should be a piece of this Blackhawks team long term. You know, but he scores a goal the other night against Vegas, and it's like, that was as pretty of a goal as I've seen Reichel score. And it's like that goal right there, if he can bottle that up and show that more often and start to produce offensively, he could potentially carve out a role on this Blackhawks team. But I'm just not sure. Like, he's had so much rope,
right?
Like, he's had a couple years to show the Blackhawks this, and he just hasn't yet. And so that is going to be a tough conversation where it's like, you don't want to give up on a guy too soon, but at the same time, how much opportunity can you get him or give him before you kind of have to make the call and go in a different direction? So that is going to be a storyline that's going to be interesting to watch, whether Reichel is a guy that generates a lot of interest at the deadline and if the Hawks pull the trigger on that, or if they're like, we need more time with him to see if he can untap his true potential in the NHL.
Yeah, that goal is the reason why some fans are like, we can't move on from this guy, even though last year he was in and out, this year he's in and out. But to his credit, he's kind of carved out a nice role on that fourth line. He's playing a lot more than he did at the beginning of the year. But, I mean, his speed, he's one of the few guys in the Hawks that can use his speed to get into the zone. He has had trouble finishing, like you said. But I don't know. With Anders Sorensen, he's looked a little better with the speed aspect and just playing a little bit more confident. I mean, last year you could tell his confidence was shot a little bit. And this year, to his credit, he worked really hard and then he's playing at least consistently. But that's tough because you don't want to be moving on from a guy and then you see him flourish somewhere else and you're kind of like,
yeah,
maybe we shouldn't have done that. But it'll be interesting to see. That's, I hadn't even thought about that. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, and with Reichel too. I mean, Connor Bedard was like gushing about him yesterday.
Yeah,
when I asked him about morning skate, and he was like, "Oh my gosh, he flies. He's so smart too. His hands keep up with his feet." And so it's like, "Oh man, hope you know." So that'll be a conversation I'm sure that Chicago's having internally, but also we'll have a lot more trade deadline discussion coming up here on the show, I'm sure, in the coming weeks as we get into March 7th. We got one more break we're going to get to on the other side, and then I'll share my thoughts on the Connor McDavid suspension. You're listening to Blackhawks Live on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, Charlie Romeliotis and Jack Heinrich with you, wrapping up the show with the news that dropped yesterday. Connor McDavid suspended for 3 games for cross-checking. It was Connor Garland. They got into a real scrap towards the end of the game, and Connor Garland was just mugging McDavid, and got to a point where the officials, for some reason, were not calling a penalty on Garland, and McDavid got so frustrated that he ended up cross-checking Garland basically in the face, and it led to a 3-game suspension for McDavid. I think it was definitely suspendable, but I was a little surprised to see it 3 games. McDavid should be number one in the league every year in most drawn penalties, and for some reason he has not been. I think he's like 50th in the NHL in penalties drawn, and it just feels like the opponents kind of get away with a lot when it comes to McDavid, and so I'm not surprised that the frustration mounted over. I think Connor had every right to feel frustrated the way he did. And if there was a penalty called, I'm not sure he reacts the way he did. So it's tough that a superstar like that is going to be out for 3 games. But I don't necessarily have a problem with anything. So that's going to do it for Blackhawks Live. We got our next show on Monday at 7 p.m. We'll talk to you then. Have a great night.